Good morning and welcome to All Things Jessamine. I'm Doug Fain. On today's program, we're going to be talking to a fellow who grew up here in Jessamine County, left for a little while, but he's back, been back since 1979. He is a bluegrass picker. Yeah, plays the guitar, plays the banjo. His band, the New South, was called probably the most influential bluegrass band since the 1970s. He's won a Grammy, and within the music circles, his name is known as influencing people like Ricky Skaggs, Keith Whitley, and others. His name is J.D. Crow, and he's one of us. We're going to talk to him this morning about his life and his contribution to this community. Right after this word from the Farmers Bank of Jessamine County.
Beginnings are important, especially when it comes to building a future. From start to finish, Farmers Bank of Jessamine County will be with you every step of the way. Whether it's a house, a car, a college fund, or saving for retirement, it all starts here. Stop by any of our four convenient Jessamine County locations today or visit us on the web at myfarmersbank.net. Banking with friends and neighbors, Farmers Bank of Jessamine County, equal housing lender, member FDIC.
Good morning and welcome to All Things Jessamine. Glad to have you on this Saturday morning as we continue to learn about people, places, and things of our county. Well, today we are glad to have a gentleman with us who has made his name in a certain genre of music in our country. And if you go around, and I've seen plenty of interviews and read plenty of articles, that if you ask a lot of people in the bluegrass business to name a mentor, if you will, or a pioneer, I guess, if you will, there's three or four names that come up. And one of them is a fellow that lives right here in our county. He went to school right here in our county, and his name is J.D. Crow. Good morning.
Good morning, Doug. How are you doing?
Good, and I'm glad to have you here and to be on our program.
Looking forward to it.
You know, we was talking earlier, there's a lot of history in this county, and there is.
Yes,
and there's
sure
a lot
is.
Of history people don't know. And there's also a lot of people that may have heard about people that don't know that they're here.
This is true.
For instance, there are a lot of people who do know that John Michael Montgomery lives here, but there's a lot of people
right.
that don't.
That's true.
He's in the country business, and you have been in bluegrass for, golly, how long? Well, we're going to talk about that. The first thing, though, I want to talk about is how you came to be. Talk to me about who your parents were. Are you a native? How did you get here? How did the Crows come to be in Jessamine County?
Well, of course, that goes way back. Well, I was born in 1937.
Uh-huh.
I was born and raised in Lexington.
Mm-hmm.
I think we lived there in Lexington until I was about 4 or 5 years old. Then we moved out to, it's the Jessamine County and Fayette County line, you
uh-huh.
know where that is.
Uh-huh.
So we moved there where the Bluegrass Memorial.
Over on Harrisburg Road.
Right, on Harrisburg
yeah.
Road is. Their office there, which is that brick house sits there,
uh-huh.
that little bank,
uh-huh.
there was a white frame house there, and that's where I was raised.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we lived there for about 13 years.
Okay.
My dad was a farm manager. All of the Crosswoods
mm-hmm.
subdivision mm-hmm. was the old Heedley farm.
Yeah.
And, there was,
and I'm assuming that is the we all know Mason Heedley Road.
Right.
Is that same family?
Yes,
yeah.
it is.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
And so we lived there, and Dad was the farm manager.
Uh-huh.
So I grew up there on the farm.
Yeah.
And you talk about the schools. I went to school in Jessamine County. Of course,
yeah.
it was right across the line.
Right.
The school bus would turn around at the farm next to where we live, which was my uncle's farm.
Uh-huh.
He owned that where all the cemetery is.
Yeah.
There.
Yeah.
My uncle owned that particular mm-hmm. part of the land there, and I think it's about 45 or 50 acres in that plot. But that was his farm. But I rode the school bus every morning from there to Providence.
Yes.
You know where the antique
oh,
store is?
Yes.
Okay. That was a schoolhouse one
yeah,
time.
Yeah.
They had built an extra little room onto it. I called it an L, kind of L, you
uh-huh.
know.
Uh-huh.
So that's where I went to school,
mm-hmm.
first grade.
Mm-hmm. Was it one room? Kinda.
It was at the time, then they added that
yeah,
L.
But they had grades probably 1 through 8, I would think.
That's it.
Yeah, like
that's
some of the other county schools.
It. And that's where I went for 7 years.
Okay. Was that the only school in this county that you attended?
No. See, that school closed down. My class, that was the last there.
Okay.
They closed that particular school, then brought it to the city.
Came Nixville, which is now Nixville Elementary.
Right.
But at that time, it housed all grades.
It housed all grades.
Yeah.
And I remember they just had completed the new addition to it.
Yeah.
Because they built a new gymnasium there. And so that was the year I was in the eighth grade.
Okay.
That year. So.
You mentioned your dad was a farm manager. Did your mom work outside the home?
No.
Okay.
She's strictly a homemaker.
And was she from Lexington?
Yes. My mom was raised, I think she was born here in Jessamine County.
Oh, yeah?
And kind of raised around here.
Yeah.
And my dad actually was born in Mount Sterling.
Okay.
But he resided here for years. He came to Jessamine County and Fayette County.
Brothers and sisters?
It was me and my sister, just two children.
Okay, all right.
You know, so
she's still living?
No, I'm sorry to say, she passed. Yeah, about a year ago.
Okay, so you were here. Did you move back to Lexington, or did you stay here for the rest of the time?
Well, in 1953, we moved.
Okay.
To the big city of Newport, Kentucky.
Wow, way up there.
That's a drastic change.
I guess. Yeah. Well, now what caused that?
But. I think Dad had gotten tired. Things were changing.
Yeah.
Because the owner, he only had one son, and he had passed. Things were changing, and Dad was kind of tired of the farm, I'd say.
Right, right. Well, that's a drastic change.
Yeah, well, Dad had a brother that lived in Newport.
Well, that helps. Okay.
He was working there.
Yeah.
So he got my dad a job at where he worked. So we were there for a couple of years. And then that place, for some reason, started laying off people.
Mm-hmm.
So we moved back to Fayette County.
Mm-hmm.
That was in 54, I think. And, of course, been here ever since.
When did you end up in Jessamine, though?
Okay, well.
Again.
again? Okay. I moved out where I'm at now in 79.
Okay. All right. Been there quite a while.
Yeah.
All right. So that's kind of the background of the Crow family and how they all came to be in the connection here.
Right.
Let's talk now about what you're most known for. At what point in time and how did it come about that a banjo or a musical instrument, it may not have been a banjo, landed in your hands for the first time?
Well, when I was growing up, I always had a little ukulele or some kind of guitar in my hands.
Mm-hmm.
And I just always liked it. I mean, my mom and dad listened to the radio a lot.
Did either one of them play?
No.
Okay.
No.
All right.
They enjoyed it.
Yeah.
And my grandfather, who on my mom, or my mom's dad and mom, they loved square dancing. And they was exposed to music for years. They did that back when they were growing up.
But you didn't come from any kind of a big musical family.
No.
So when you had this ukulele, did you teach yourself?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
I would listen.
And pick it up through your ears and just mimic it, I guess.
Right, yeah. Trying to.
So you know what you had. You had a God-given talent.
Well, yeah, but I'll tell you what, it takes a lot of work.
Oh, I know. Yeah. It wasn't automatic. But the ability to listen to a song and start to play it yourself, that's a talent. Yeah. How old would you have been when that kind of all started?
Oh, I was probably four or five.
Oh, very young.
Oh, yeah.
Very young.
You know, yeah.
All right.
I was exposed to music because, like I said, my mom and dad listened to the Grand Ole Opry every Saturday night.
Right.
And that type of thing. And, we listened to the record
shows.
Well,
then, at what point in time did you really get serious? What do you consider the point in your life where you thought, this is it?
Well, that was quite a while, four or five years old until.
You were grown. It was in the mid-50s.
Yeah, I was.
You were grown.
I kept on. See, how I started with the banjo. In 1950, I believe, Lester Flatner of Scruggs, who was picked with Bill Monroe in Nashville on the Grand Ole Opry at the time. They had left and started their own group.
Okay.
Well, at that time, the Lexington had a, what they call the barn dance, every Saturday night at Clay Walks Arena. Well, it used to be Clay Gentry Arena.
Yeah.
And it went to Clay Walks. I mean, Gentry probably sold out in the Walks Balls, whatever.
Right.
But they had a barn dance there.
A lot of people recognize that name in conjunction with the stockyards.
Oh, well, it was. That's what it was originally built for.
Yeah.
For horse sales.
Yeah.
Cattle. And they had a stage which would bring the horses out on. People set up like an amphitheater situation.
And that's where they'd have this barn dance.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that was every Saturday night.
Yeah.
And that grew to be a big thing back then. You had your locals.
Right.
Esco Hankins.
Oh, wow.
Was there. He was kind of the head honcho, I'd say, of that. And the host, really, of the show. Then you had, and it was live. It also had some good sponsors. And it was broadcast over different radio stations one time. So I was exposed. We went usually every Saturday night.
So you heard this. You saw these people.
Oh, I saw these people. They would book special acts like from the Opry, from Nashville.
Did you ever think, did you ever dream in your wildest dreams, sitting there in that audience, that one day that you'd not only meet these people, but would play with them? I mean, how did you ever think?
Never had a clue.
That had to be amazing.
That, I mean, you know, back then, you have your little dreams back
then. Well, sure, but to think it was so far-fetched.
You know,
because you mentioned some names there. I mean, even Esco Hankins.
Yeah.
You know, he was a celebrity around these parts.
Oh, he was. At one time, he was a...
Yeah, and
he came from Knoxville, Tennessee, is where he came from, to Lexington. Well, back then, I mean, it was a lot of live performance concerts.
Yeah.
People would go out and play different... They'd play schoolhouses.
Yeah.
Driving in theaters, courthouses, wherever they could draw a crowd.
Right, right.
And well, how I got into that, the music, actually, was with Esco Hankins.
Yeah.
He had they used to do talent shows. And I suppose you might remember some of those. Because, no, you're not that old.
No, but I know what you're talking about. And you kind of got in one, didn't you?
And I entered one. It was that particular one that he had.
Yeah.
I think it was at the old Opera House Theater in Lexington.
Really?
Back then.
Yeah.
And I won it.
How old would you have been then?
Probably 14.
Wow.
Yeah. I didn't get my first banjo until I was 13.
Wow. And taught yourself. Again, we have to emphasize this.
I was exposed, though. See, I saw Lester Flatt and Earl Scruggs there. That's what started me playing the
banjo. But the thing is, what's so impressive, and it may not be to you, but it is to me, I can turn on what they call YouTube now,
right,
and I can watch videos of Liberace. But that don't mean I'm going to play the piano like him.
Oh, that's true.
You listen to those guys, but you had the unique ability to know in your mind how to mimic it and how to do what they were doing, and you just kept practicing, and you got good and got better and better and better, and you won the talent show.
Yeah.
Now, do you remember what you got?
Yes, the prize, you could appear on his radio show.
Oh, really?
See, every Saturday night, he had a one-hour radio show.
Yeah.
At WLAP.
Yeah, yeah.
In Lexington.
Right.
At the old Nunn building, which the building is still standing.
Yeah.
But it is totally different now. But anyway, I won that was the prize.
Uh-huh.
So I went, got on his, put me off for a couple of numbers. I'm scared to death, of course.
Well, sure.
You know, and all these guys were pros, see, and I was just in awe of these people, man.
Exactly.
You know? So I won I did that, and he invited me back next Saturday to do it. Okay. Well, that kept on, and finally, see, Esco did a lot of personal appearances.
Uh-huh.
He worked Thursday, Friday nights going out and doing concerts around these different places. And he invited me to go on the shows. So I became one of the kind of regular band members.
Yeah.
Because he had talked to my dad and mom, and
they
said, well, long as you can get him back in time for him to go to school. So you can imagine, a lot of times I would get in at 4 in the morning.
Oh, yeah, you get up next in an hour
and go
to
school the next day.
Exactly.
You know, so that's how all that developed. And then from there, of all things, which was weird kind of, but I was on this show one night playing. I've been playing with them for quite a while.
Mm-hmm.
I was involved with the band then. So this guy, a particular fellow, was driving through Lexington. So he was a lead singer for Bill Monroe for 4 years or 5 years on the Opry. So he had been on the Grand Ole Opry Bill Monroe was singing lead, recording, doing the recordings with him. Well, he had left, and he was going his way to Ohio. He wanted to start his own deal with a band. Well, he heard me play on that particular show. He just happened to be
flipping through
the radio, and I was playing. So he calls the radio station. Well, who that was playing the banjo?
And it was you.
That was me.
What was his name?
Jimmy Martin.
Jimmy Martin, one of the other great names in bluegrass.
Yep. So I worked
with Smoky Mountain Boys?
Sunny Mountain Boys.
Sunny Mountain Boys, okay.
So I worked with Jimmy. We went to WPFB in Middletown, Ohio. They had a shindig up there also at the time. Well, I worked till I had to go back to school. I worked during my summer vacation, you know. So I worked there with him for a while.
Well, if you were with him...
Well, I learned a lot right
there. I mean, it wasn't just concerts. You probably were on some recordings, too, didn't you?
Well, that came later.
Okay.
So anyway, I came back to school. Well, in 1956, the band, he was located then at the time in Detroit, Michigan. He had moved there because there was a lot of music, different genres of music going on at the time in Detroit. So he was playing up there, doing a lot of nightclubs too, I might add, which I'd already been exposed to some of that. And everybody is. that's part of the music business.
That's right.
And I think that's what makes you a good musician, is playing in clubs, which, you know, gets old quick, but that's part of the business.
Part of the business.
Anyway, he was living in Detroit. Well, in 56, he called me again. The band that he had all left, and he needed, so he called me again.
Right.
Well, I was in going to Lafayette High School at the time. We were living in Lexington, well out in the country. And he called, and that was in June, that summer of 56. Well, because I was all anxious, you know, because I learned so much from him about the music business and, you know, what to do and what not to do. So I joined him again, and I stayed 5 years with him. So I never went back to school. I had gone 3 months, I think, in my junior year in Lafayette, and then I'd quit. I wanted to play.
Sure.
Well, I'd gotten a lot of, you know, advanced then, and I knew a lot more. And so he hired me, and we had a couple other guys. Later on, he hired Paul Williams, who I worked with for 5 years. I stayed with Jimmy 5. Paul joined him a year later, so he stayed probably 6 years. But anyway, we were in Detroit, and then from there, we moved to Shreveport, Louisiana. That was in 1958, the latter part, 58. We moved to Shreveport, Louisiana, and joined the Louisiana Hayride.
Oh, my gosh.
So that was a big move.
That was a big deal.
Because Jimmy, at the time, I'd recorded some records. He was on Decca Records.
Did Louisiana Hayride precede the Grand Ole Opry, or was it was as big as Grand Ole Opry at that time?
It was really about the same time.
Yeah, I think so, but one was as big as the other.
Right, at one time it was.
Yeah, right.
Because all of the acts played on the Hayride.
Yeah.
Went to the Grand Ole Opry in later years.
Let me interrupt you a minute and ask you a question. You're a young man. You're a young man when all this is happening, and things are going pretty breakneck speed, I would assume, because you're young and all this is coming about. And there's a reason I'm going to ask you this. I remember back in my days working at the old NVL, and we played old country, and the very first time that I ever had the opportunity to go to Nashville and stand on the old Ryman Theater stage, Ryman now, not the new one, Ryman.
The old,
This feeling that came over me, almost to the point, I don't want to sound corny, but almost to the point of being weak-kneed, because it went through my mind who had stood there before, from Hank Williams to, you know, all the greats, Johnny Cash, I mean, just you could name everybody. First time you ever met some of these people. I'm just going to throw a few names out. Just tell me, I'm assuming you met these people. You mentioned Flat and Scruggs.
Yep.
That had to be Bill Monroe.
Oh, yeah.
Stanley. I mean, that had to be absolutely overwhelming to a point.
It was.
To finally be right there with these people that you had grew up
Just
in awe of.
I knew I knew them by the music.
Right. But to meet them, that, I got the feeling you must have had
and
is
picked
like,
with them later. And I knew the guys. I knew all of them. I met them all. And all of the side men, which was, to me was just as, they were as big as the artists.
Right.
Themselves,
right.
You know,
right.
Because they supplied the music.
Yes.
You know, and they were great musicians. And I got to be friends with a lot of them.
That had to be some of the best memories that you could ever have.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Is meeting those type people.
Yeah. Otherwise, I would never have got to do that.
Sure. Exactly. Yeah. That's exactly
and
right.
I stayed in it. And a lot of people dropped out, and I can understand
yeah,
why.
Yeah, right, right. It's hard work.
It's hard.
It's hard business.
It's very frustrating.
Yes.
Aggravating, whatever you want to call it.
Well, nowadays, business. J.D., in the music business, in all genres of music, you can have one hit and be automatically famous all over the world. Not like that back then. No, that didn't.
Oh,
it wasn't
no.
instant fame like that
no,
back then.
Uh-huh.
Who was, and we're getting off the track a little bit here, but I'm just yeah. really interested. Who do you think, who in your mind was the absolute best banjo player ever?
Earl Scruggs. No, you know, hands down.
Now, if any of you young folks out there are listening to us, and these names don't mean anything to you, if you ever had Mom and Dad's old TV channel on and heard the Beverly Hillbillies theme song,
that's
that
right.
was them. They're the ones that did
that's
that.
It.
So he was the best. What about guitar?
The guy that I play with, Jimmy Martin,
yeah,
probably to me is one of the best rhythm. Now, not lead guitar,
right.
but rhythm,
yeah,
which supplies a lot of the time in the music,
right.
you know,
right?
And you have to have that. But to me, Jimmy was probably at yeah. one time.
Yeah,
as Nichols, I love Lester Flatt's guitar playing. I mean, he was right there as the same, you know. And
now, as far and I'm taking you out of the mix,
yeah.
But as far as who you consider the absolute pinnacle of bluegrass, who would that be?
I would say, and luckily. He worked with me for four or five years, was Tony Rice.
Yeah?
That would be, to me,
yeah.
because he joined my group in 71, and we were, of course, playing the Holiday Inn at mm-hmm. the time.
Well, let's talk about yeah. that for a moment. Now,
well,
you were in Louisiana, but
yeah.
at some point
well,
in time, you
I, what happened,
got your
I,
own.
And I'll tell you, music's like politics. You could talk about it forever and ever, cover all of it.
That's
you know,
right.
But... you know, it's easy to jump ahead of yourself, but it's because there's so much went on.
Sure.
You know, getting to a certain point.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, we left the Hayride in 1960, late 60, I think. Went from there to Wheeling, West Virginia,
mm.
to the world's original, old original barn dance, they
mm-hmm.
called it
mm-hmm.
back then. And they had, it was a big audience.
Mm-hmm.
We went there, was there for a, I was there about a year. I left Jim in 61.
Okay.
I'd kind of gotten tired of, I mean, when you're in Shreveport, Louisiana.
Yeah.
And you go from there to Wheeling, West Virginia.
Yeah.
To me, that's a big disappointment.
Yeah.
But anyway. No, I guess.
Different culture,
because,
folks.
Yeah, it is.
And, it is.
And I know I made a lot of good people
sure.
and friends
sure.
in Shreveport.
But it's a little slower living.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But we worked out in Texas and New Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
We even worked, there's a place down there called Del Rio, Texas.
Heard of Del Rio.
And they used to have this all-night record show. And I used to listen to that while we were traveling.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember the name of that fellow that did that.
I can't. I used to remember. I can't remember.
He figured out a way. He had a super transmitter.
Yeah.
And he had a, I mean, he transmitted. In fact, I'll tell you, a family that actually went there and was part of their programming live was the Carter Bunch.
Oh, yeah. The
Jim
Carter
Carter.
Family.
The Carter
yes,
family.
Yes, sir. They did.
From that station
live,
there.
Because, yeah.
And it was heard forever all over the world almost.
That's, you know,
yeah.
The thing about that, I think the transmitter, I don't know for sure if I'm right on this, but the transmitter was in one, was in the U.S. and the tower was in Mexico.
And that's how they could push
yeah,
all that. They weren't
right.
regulated.
That's right.
how they could push all that.
You
wattage.
Could hear that station anywhere.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That
so they, that was it. You were the, yeah.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
So... We did that.
In fact, that's how the Carters, this is a completely
oh,
different
yeah.
side. That's how they got their name.
Of course.
And got to be known was all the people listening.
Oh, yeah.
So you went to Del Rio. That's
went
cool.
Well, we just played there. I mean,
yeah.
for a one-night concert
yeah.
in that area.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, we played all out West Texas, you know, and Lubbock, yeah, Big Springs,
yeah.
Just all kind of, you know, it's a lot of driving.
Sure.
And this was before interstates.
Yeah, and you just had a car. Or no,
we were in a car.
Yeah,
yes.
Station wagon or something. And that wasn't these big million-dollar buses.
No, no, well, that wasn't even in existence.
Exactly, exactly.
You know, I don't think.
Hard life.
Yeah, and we were, well, at least it was a Cadillac, though.
Well, yeah, okay.
You know, back then, that was
sure,
a big deal.
Sure,
but we did that, a lot of traveling. And then we left there and went to Wheeling.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd really gotten tired. The money wasn't like it should have been. And,
yeah.
Well, you know, it never is a lot of times. But anyway, I stayed in it because I was determined to learn the music up to a point, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But then I got to thinking, well, you know, I'm not making what I should be making, you know. Everything back then, everything I had, I paid cash for,
mm-hmm.
you know. So I got tired. I came back to Lexington,
mm-hmm.
1961.
Now, is that when the New South came about?
That little later, yeah.
Yeah.
Came about like in, not until about 71.
Oh, yeah. Big. What'd you do in the meantime?
Well, I worked at a, what they call a regular job.
Yeah.
Which, hey, nothing wrong with that.
Nothing wrong with that.
I worked for Wilson Implement Company, who sold farm equipment.
Yeah, farm equipment.
I had a cousin that worked there, so he got me the job. And worked there for a while. They moved up to their industrial store,
mm-hmm.
which sold mill, mine, and contractors' mm-hmm. supplies.
Mm-hmm.
And they paid a little bit better.
Mm-hmm.
So I moved up there and worked there till, I guess, we started at the Holiday Inn in 1968.
Yeah, and the rest is history.
And the rest is history, so they say.
You were there a long time.
We were 68. We left in 75.
Yeah.
But we would go, I think we worked 8 months out of the year.
Mm-hmm.
The 4 months we would take off. That was in the summer. You go play festivals.
Yeah.
Different concerts, different venues.
Mm-hmm.
And we did that. I think that kept our sanity. Because if we had to stay there year-round,
well, sure,
it'd been tough, you know. It was a hard gig, but it was a good gig, especially in the wintertime.
You kept on playing.
Oh, yeah.
And do you still play as much as you used to?
No. Right. I retired.
Finally retired.
Yep.
What to you, if you look at that whole career there, what was, in your mind, what was the pinnacle of success for you? Any particular thing happened that...
You know, in my situation, it was just a slow climb,
yeah.
You might say, to a certain point. You know, and that's the way it is, really. It's not a quick deal. It's a longevity thing.
Right.
You know, and if you're determined and you hang in there and pay attention and make it a business,
mm-hmm.
you know, not all partying all the time.
Right,
you know,
right.
But you can survive if you... You know, if you pay attention. But it's still rough. It's still hard to do.
You have had some names that's played with you that people mm-hmm. may recognize. Because, and I'm going to brag on JD here a minute and some things that people think about him. His band is considered probably one of the most influential bluegrass groups since the 70s. There's a couple of names that comes to mind right off the bat. Keith Whitley.
Right.
Man alive, who could not mention Ricky Skaggs?
Right.
And the success that he's had. There's other, you mentioned Tony Rice.
Tony Rice.
And people like
Dahl
that.
Dahl Lawson.
Yeah. I mean, there's been a lot of guys that you have influenced.
Oh, yeah.
Over the years.
That's true.
And, you know, there's a lot of people especially in the bluegrass / country music business that recognize your influence in the business. You've received quite a few awards over the time for your work in bluegrass. And is there any one of those that stands out that just kind of...
I guess probably the most surprised one really was when we won the Grammy.
Yeah.
For that instrumental.
Did you have any clue that was coming?
We did not. We were just playing. We were just doing it the best we could.
Yeah.
And, you know, that was it. We were just enjoying it at the time.
That's when it's fun, isn't it?
It is.
That's when it really does mean, I think.
Yeah.
When you are surprised and you are just doing it. You know, I remember my dad. drew pictures all his life. Raised two boys on drawing pictures. But to him, you know, it was just something he enjoyed doing. It was a paycheck, and it put food on the table, but it was something you enjoyed to do.
You really enjoy. And, you know, I think about how many people out here. I mean, everybody can't be musicians.
No.
Everybody can't be pilots or doctors or lawyers.
That's right.
Everybody has their place, and I think it's just something that's meant to be.
Yeah. Absolutely.
How many people can say they really enjoyed going to work?
Yeah.
I mean, come on, really, to be truthful.
You're exactly right. There's a lot of things that we have to do in our life that's not that enjoyable.
When you start, you're committed.
Yeah.
And then once you're committed, you have to stay with that. You know.
But you said some things that were meant to be. You know, there's a reason that at a particular night, Jimmy Martin flipped that radio over and heard.
Right, it is. It was good for me.
Sure.
At the time,
well, it was good for him, too.
Yeah.
We
had a great relationship.
Thing.
Yeah.
But you look, JD, at, we mentioned Ricky Skaggs and the late Keith Whitley and Tony and Doyle and other people like that. You know, we have talked on this program many times about the effect that people have on future without knowing it.
Well, that's true. You don't know
those people I just mentioned.
Right.
They were affected by Jimmy Martin tuning you in.
Yeah.
They had no clue that was going to happen.
No, you don't.
But the things that happen in our lifetime to cause other things to happen.
Right.
When you really look at it and study it, it's really kind of amazing.
It is.
To think, you know, Ricky Skaggs, who's just as good a player as ever walked.
That's right.
And still to this day continues to do so.
Yeah.
But the influence that he had from you, from Jimmy, from all those people, it goes way back.
Goes way back, Stair steps.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, if you want to say it
that way. That's right.
A lot of it is what you put into it.
Yeah.
Is what you'll get out of it.
Miss it? Miss the traveling?
I'd be lying if I didn't say I missed it. I do miss it.
Yeah.
I really miss the camaraderie of my picking buddies.
Yeah.
I miss seeing them. And because I know all of them.
Right.
We played same shows for years together.
Yeah.
And, you know, and those guys now that you were real young, now they're... I call them old men now.
Well, and that happens to some of us. The best of us
gets, thank goodness,
gets to that point. You're exactly right.
But it takes a lot of work. It's not an overnight deal.
Right.
You know, I look back on, sometimes I wonder how I ever survived.
Sure,
doing that because a lot of things went down that, of course, people don't know about. And that's part of the getting to where you want to be.
Would you change it at all?
Probably not. Maybe a couple things, but basically no.
Here's a tough question. If you had the opportunity to make sure that people remembered one thing about J.D. Crow after you're gone, what would it be? What do you hope people would remember? If they could only say one thing about you, what would you hope it be?
You know, that's a hard, hard question.
It is hard.
To answer. You know, I've always tried to be helpful to up-and-coming pickers.
Yeah.
I call them. But I think that one thing I've always done, I've never turned away a child.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, so many people come up and want your autograph.
Right.
And I've turned away a few adults because one thing or another, they had a little bit of smell on the breath. It was,
I understand.
You know, I understand. And I didn't care for that anyway. But a child or a kid... I never, ever turn down them for an autograph or a picture because they will remember that. I remembered it when I was growing up and being around these pictures.
Sure, that's exactly right.
When I was learning.
Yeah, and those people that, like you did, when you were standing up here at Esco Hankins' place and seeing those people and like, oh my goodness.
Yeah.
You know, they were their stars
at that
point in time. And you're right. You don't ever forget
because a child will never forget that.
No, you're right.
And I've tried to make that, you know, stand. I don't care how tired or whatever. I would always sign, if they want an autograph, I would sign it. If it's a picture of their banjo or guitar, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Or if they wanted a picture.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I would always try to make sure I did that.
People, I want you to do us a favor once you've listened to this program. I want you to get on YouTube, and I want you to search this man, J.D. Crow, and I want you, if you haven't already, listen to some of the music that, he's put out. The Grammy was for which song?
It was for an instrumental of all things.
Yeah, right.
And, of course, instrumentals back then were nominated for Grammys.
Sure.
Chet Atkins was nominated numerous times.
Yes.
And won a bunch of times.
Yeah, and should have.
Jerry Reed.
Oh,
back then,
Lord,
those
yes.
people like that.
Yeah.
And we up against Chet on, at that, I think it was four or five people we were up against. And we luckily won. I tell you, it's funny. We were in California recording, me and the... later on, we got together after everybody split up doing their own bands.
Yeah.
Tony called me about, he had to do a bluegrass album. He owed the recording company one.
Mm-hmm.
He had never done a straight, because he'd been out doing the jazz type thing with David Grisman
mm-hmm.
in California. And he called me one time and says, I owe Rounder Records a album, man, a bluegrass album. I said, I want you to help me on the banjo, okay? And he, yes. I said, well, sure. You know, and... that was when I still had a band, of course, but
mm-hmm.
and then he asked me who we I want to get to play Man with St. Tenor, of course. I said Doyle Lawson,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
because we had worked together not
right.
at the same time,
right?
And I knew that would ought to be, you know, a good fit for us three
mm-hmm.
because we worked together, we knew each other, how each other thought,
sure,
and we all grew up on the same kind of music.
Sure.
You know, so, and then we got the fiddle player, of course, with Bobby Hicks,
mm-hmm.
you know, and we just, let's see, yeah, that was the first three CDs, was myself, Tony Rice, Noel Lawson, Bobby Hicks, and Todd Phillips, who was Tony's bass player in his band,
okay.
doing the jazz stuff. Okay, we did three, and then we brought in Jerry Douglas
mm-hmm.
on the rest of it. We did six CDs. And that was a lot of fun to do that.
Sure.
Because we just, what we did a, it was just a tribute to show people we hadn't forgot how to play bluegrass. Because we'd all kind of strayed a little bit from the
yeah.
hardcore. And,
yeah.
And I did a lot of country mixture stuff, country grass, I call it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so we went back and did that to show that we hadn't forgot. And also, it was a tribute to the people that we learned from, that we grew up on.
Right.
And we just interpreted it in our feel,
mm-hmm.
the way we felt it. And that's how it worked out. And they turned out great.
You know, I guess if you have to, I guess jazz and bluegrass, if you have to look at two genres of
very
music, that's America's sense. Music.
It
that's
is.
It.
It is.
And of course, the bluegrass, it started in the Appalachia Mountains and all that area of the country. And even today, though, it's amazing. I heard some, I can't remember the name of the group, but there was a group now that is recording big time pop songs and,
oh, yeah.
and rock and roll songs in bluegrass.
Yeah, we did that too.
One of the ones I think I heard was Elton John's Rocket Man, and they
yeah.
have recorded it now
yeah.
with the bluegrass. It sounds amazing.
Yeah,
when you put that sound to it with basically they
acoustic,
had a banjo
yeah.
and I think they had a bass and they had a
right.
fiddle, and that
yeah.
was it. But yeah, it's bluegrass has been such a it's the grassroots. It truly is the grassroots
right.
of
yeah.
all other types of music.
That's
around
true.
Here.
And you know, it's a shame, but of course, being a musician. You know, because I listen to all kinds of music.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I like the old country.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking about people like Leslie Frazelle.
Sure,
who
yeah.
was a stylist and innovator.
Yeah, yeah.
George Jones.
Yeah.
Merle Haggard.
What's country, in my opinion?
The old Conway.
Yes.
Whitty. Mel Street. You're talking
yeah.
Johnny Paycheck.
Yes.
Gene Watson.
Yeah.
You know, all those. That's who I listen to.
Yeah, yeah.
And I still listen to.
Good memories
you know?
There.
And then the bluegrass, of course, Flats Grove. So that's where I started.
Right.
You know.
Right.
And Don Reno, Red Smiley. That was a tough group.
Yeah.
You know, and they were all stylists. They were innovators.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't sound like anybody else.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You can't say that today.
No. It all sounds alike.
Exactly. Of course, back when the old rock era came in,
mm-hmm.
you know, the Elvis Presley days, because mm-hmm. I listened to that, listened to all the old rock. I used to watch Dick Clark show, listen, you know, every time it was on.
Yeah, of course.
I love the And there's so much good music come out of that era.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
It was changing.
Exactly, that's
you
right.
You could hear it, you could feel it.
Yeah.
You know, different people, different artists.
Yeah.
And some of them were one-hit wonders. Hey,
but it made a difference.
But it made a difference.
It made a difference.
You know, and they were all more or less stylist.
Mm-hmm.
They had their own sound.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't sound like anybody else.
Right.
And that's what I like.
Well, we are glad that you listened to it.
Yeah.
We're glad that you taught yourself how to do it. You know, I think that it's already been shown, and you have heard this, and isn't it good to hear this kind of stuff while you're still living?
It is.
And people don't wait till you're gone.
That's
but,
true, yeah.
But the fact is, folks, is when you get into bluegrass music, there are always going to be a group of names that are mentioned, and one of them is this gentleman right here. We're proud of the fact that you are part of our county. A lot of people may not know that
That's
you're
true.
A part of our county, but folks, you know, one of the premier banjo bluegrass players is right here with us, and he's part of our county, and we are so glad that you are, JD.
Thank you.
Appreciate you talking to us.
Enjoyed it very much.
Yeah, I appreciate it. And you, good luck in the future. And
thank you.
And whatever comes your way.
Thank you.
My thanks to JD for coming in this morning and sharing about his life with us and the influence he's had in the music industry. He's one of us, guys. Lived a long time here in our county right beside us. Well, I appreciate you coming in every morning at All Things Jessamine. We'll do it again next Saturday. Don't forget my regular show every weekday morning from 6 until 8 right here on Jess FM 105.9.
In 1934, a brand new house cost about $6,000. The cost of a gallon of gas was 10 cents. And in 1934, Farmers Bank of Jessamine County opened their doors at 200 North Main Street in Nicholasville. And they've been there ever since. The times may have changed, but Farmers Bank is still here. Still proud to be the only locally owned and locally operated bank in Jessamine County. Banking with friends and neighbors. Farmers Bank, Equal Housing Lender, Member FDIC.